Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, the number one Game of Thrones podcast in the realm for people who party like Tyrion and slay like Daenerys, brought to you by Grand X Media. I am Ross Boland here at the Grand X Media Studios in Austin, Texas, with Barrett Dudley.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Governor.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm actually, do you know what? Tell me how many people you think out there are feeling like this today. My weekend was so incredibly boring and distasteful that I was really happy to come to work today.
Really?
Yeah, just a real dog shit weekend.
I wish I could say the same. It wasn't a great weekend. It just, I didn't want to come to work.
Sleep. I was ready to get back in the stew, you know, talk to the clam fam.
Way to start the podcast on the most negative possible note. Your life is just shit and you're letting everyone know? Wow.
No, I just, you know, I used to have like cool friends with cool things to do on the weekends, like boats and lakes and fun houses and parties. And I was literally not invited to do shit this weekend. I didn't have a single hot dog off the grill. Nobody was around. Everybody had other things going on.
I went to a one-year-old's birthday party.
Yeah. So yeah, just everybody's going to one-year-old birthday parties. And
this is 30, Barrett. You're looking at it.
I went and got coffee like every day. I tried a new coffee shop.
Yeah, that's fun.
That was fun,
whiny,
I guess.
Whiny little bitch.
Yeah.
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 Oh, whatever. This is the Night's Rewatch. We're doing a podcast for every episode of Game of Thrones, starting with season one episode. I can't get over how we just started this.
Well, not to mention the capper of last night.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah.
Leading up to the final season of our favorite show, so we can all be as prepared as possible. Take the black and join us. Recruit your family members, your friends, your coworkers, anybody who loves Game of Thrones. Let them know Oysters, Clams, and Cockles is here to fill the gap between season 7 and 8 to get you as informed and educated as possible before the show kicks back up. As a member of the Clam Fam and as a brother or sister in the Night's Rewatch, you are capable of invoking Sumai on manoutfitters.com and getting 15% off your whole order if you spend $150 or more. Free shipping included always. Manoutfitters.com is our one-stop men's shop for all your clothing needs as a man that we have created here at Grand X. And if you remember the Clam Fam, you can type in Sumai, S-U-M-A-I, at checkout on manoutfitters.com and get 15% off your whole order if you spend $150. Free shipping always. We've got incredible swimsuits, great hats, just all around. All your summer needs for threads can be fulfilled here.
Did you know that we started carrying field notes?
I did not.
For anybody that doesn't know what field notes are, they're kind of like you probably have heard of the brand of Moleskine.
Okay.
Moleskine does like these little like nice bound little notebooks.
Yeah, they're
pads.
Fancy. Make you feel fancy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, field notes does all sorts of different ones. There's graph paper. There's lined, there's just completely blank, there's spiral bound, there's regular bound. There's one called Expedition, which you cannot has because they already sold out.
Huh.
But they're super cool. They're very just like handy little note takers. Throw one in your bag, take one traveling. Maybe you're into journaling. Anyways, check them out. They're like, it's like, you know, 10 bucks for a 3-pack. Just throw it in, throw it on top of your cart. You know?
Right stuff. Hell, draw a dick in there. Nobody can stop you. But yeah,
if you want to do dicks in there, do dicks in there.
Do dicks. Fuck it. In all seriousness, great clothing selection as well as things to write on. Manoutfitters.com, Sumai. Our hotline number is 866-43-CLAMS. 866-43-CLAMS, as in oysters, clams, and cockles. You can call with questions, clam fam corrections, takes, whatever you want. The hotline is here for you. It's a voicemail. You just call it. You say your piece. If you mess up, just hang up and call back. It's no big deal. We'll play the one that worked, not the one that didn't. We've got 3 calls today. Here's the first one.
Hey, Clam Fam. This is Tyla from North Dakota. I'm calling with a clarification from the last podcast relating to Prince Oberyn. So all of his daughters are considered Sam Snakes because he's the Red Viper, and they're his daughters, so they're called Snakes. And Sand is the last name for every bastard in Dorne, just like Snow is the last name for the bastards in the North. So his daughters are referred to as Sand Snakes. The youngest four are all with Ilaria, his paramour, in these episodes. But the oldest four all have different moms. I think they all can wield weapons and fight. That's also why they're called Sand Snakes. And then the next thing, when he's talking with Cersei and he says, we don't hurt little girls in Dorne, what he's referring to is the sack of King's Landing when his sister Elia was raped by Clegane. Her two kids were also killed. One of them, Rhaenys, was just a little girl. So he's referring, you know, saying that we don't hurt little girls in Dorne, meaning that the Lannisters did here. All right. Hope that helps. Love the pod. Can't wait till next week. Thanks.
Hey, much appreciated. Good call.
Was that, did she, I think she said her name was Kyla, but I just heard Tyler.
Yeah, that was Tyler.
That was Tyler.
Yeah.
And I think she was from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Regardless of what state she said, because that accent was for sure Minnesota, but I'm pretty sure she said Minnesota.
It's funny because anytime anybody reads a line from Oberyn, I hear it in his voice. Like, we don't hurt the little girls in Dorne. It's really weird. Like, his voice is so good and distinct in the show that it, like, just resonates in my brain.
But that makes sense. Every time that I guess he's talking, he's making the reference to the little girls, he's, like,
specifically
always
alluding.
Talking about that one particular incident.
With right? His sister, Aaliyah.
Yeah.
And her babies.
And her babies. Yeah.
Yeah. We get a lot of more information about Oberyn in this episode. More things come to light as to what his actual intentions are in King's Landing, which is nice. All around, he's just such a good fucking character. Love the guy. Next call.
Hey, Ross Barrett. This is Taylor. Not to be confused with Tyler, although some people do call
me
Tyler on accident. But just I'm a little bit behind. Thought the Jojen Reed having all those seizures was kind of interesting. Back, I think it was episode 3 of the 4th season. Because if you notice, Hodor kind of did the same thing when Bran went back in time and warged into Hodor. So, I don't know, maybe there's a correlation between going back in time, warging into somebody. Is Bran, perhaps future Bran, warging into Jojen? And he's being his own guide, and that's why he's seizing up all the time. I don't know. It seems like Jojen's got a lot of special powers, and maybe Bran is the reason because of that. I don't know. What do you guys think? See ya.
I love that because of Bran's ability. This all started with the same theory, right? That Bran somehow has caused all of these terrible things that happen in Westeros.
Uh-huh.
Give me some examples here. What? Hodor is the obvious one. We actually see that play out
right
on the screen.
Yeah.
The Mad King one is the other theory that he went back and tried to somehow change what was happening, and the Mad King ended up saying burn them all over and over as a result.
Also that Bran is the Night King.
Also that he is the Night King, possibly. Yeah. There's
and Bran the Builder.
People want to blame Bran for everything based on, I think it's his face. And this is just another example. And it's actually a pretty good little theory. I don't think it has any legs, really, to be honest. But it's always a possibility. And that's what makes Bran theories so interesting. Because Jojen is clearly fucked up. He looks terrible. He's seizing all the time. We've talked about it over and over. And sure, we see Hodor have seizures as a result of him being warged into by Bran. Why couldn't that be possible that Jojen is having seizures for the same reason? I don't know. It just, we've been told by his sister Mira that the visions take their toll. We know how all this, it just seems already like it's been explained. So I'm not looking for any deeper explanation personally, but I appreciate the call. I thought it was interesting enough to play. Next.
Hey, what's up, OCC? This is Tom from Boston. Just a couple of corrections. You guys mentioned, you know, when they're in the small council meeting and Tywin writes a letter right after they're talking about how powerful Daenerys' army has become. And he's like, hey, we got to deal with this. He's not stirring up a war with the Harpies. The Harpies are a homegrown marine problem because they don't like Daenerys and they want their slaves back. What Tywin is doing, he's writing a letter pardoning one of her knights, Sir Friendzone, I can't think of his name, but he gets that letter sent to him basically saying, hey, you're pardoned, thanks for spying, you know, welcome back. That letter is found, and as a result, Daenerys fires him, and it's very sad. His name's Jorah Mormont. So that's the purpose of that letter. It actually plays out very well because their position is weakened as a result. Also, the reason why Shay acts so childish is because she is a child. In the book, Shay is actually like 15, and that's why she swayed so easily and doesn't seem to always think things through. Love the pod, guys. See ya. Bye.
You know what, Barrett? I'm going to say that that call right there from Tyler in Minnesota was the best call we've gotten this season. That was, seriously, though, that was an incredible explanation. You're exactly right. That's the letter Tywin is writing, is the pardon to Jorah.
Yeah.
But what I don't know is, was he writing that letter with the intention of it being seen and fucking up her whole camp? That had to
probably
have been it, right?
Probably, yeah. I think twofold. Either one, Jorah's like, oh shit, I can come back to Westeros.
And he bails.
Because that's what he wants.
Yeah.
Two, the letter is found and he's outed as a spy, as a former spy.
Dissension in the ranks.
And yes, yeah. Right. And it throws a wrench in the wheel.
I love that Tyler couldn't even remember Jorah's real name for a few seconds.
Yeah,
there.
that was obviously like a knowledgeable guy about Game of Thrones, and
still couldn't remember him. Sir Friendzone.
You couldn't even ride for my man's for like 1 second?
Sir Friendzone. No, I mean, that's just how big of a cuck he is, though. Is that everyone remembers him as Sir Friendzone at this point instead of... He eventually said it, Jorah Mormont. Great clarifications all around, though. The part about Shay being like 15 in the books...
That...
Dude, George R. R. Martin... The show, age-wise, works so much better.
Yeah.
Children don't have like the level of depth that we needed these characters to have. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
absolutely.
I'm happy we didn't stick with his... pedophilic ways.
And all, well, okay. Clam fam, you guys can call in and tell me this too. We get Tyrion like not wanting to stick it to Sansa because she's a child.
Right.
So does that not happen in the books?
Yeah, that's a good question. And again, I mean, obviously I'm the least knowledgeable book reader of all time. So yeah, I'd love to know the answer to that. If that even played, my guess is that didn't play out like that in the books. Yeah.
Yeah, because they obviously... They put that one through the spin zone.
Yeah.
To make Tyrion look a little better because...
Right. Shay's way more effective as an adult.
Falling in love with a 15-year-old whore? Like, come on,
that's
man.
That's a terrible look.
That's not a... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... Look, we are a podcast about the show. So we go with the television show no matter what.
Yeah.
But it's always interesting to get those little tidbits about... the differences between the books and the show. Thank God Shay's not 15. That would have been a nightmare. Anyway, thanks to everybody who called the hotline this week. Those are the three we chose to play. 866-43-CLAMS is the number. Let's get into season 4, episode 7, titled Mockingbird, written by Benioff and Weiss, and directed by Alex Sakharov. Mockingbird, of course, being the sigil that Littlefinger, Peter Baelish, has chosen for himself.
Call me Peter.
He's made... He's so creepy. He's made his own little, you know, family thing he's got going here. We start off in King's Landing with Jaime scolding Tyrion back in his jail cell for not heeding his advice during the trial. He says, I made a deal for you to keep your ungrateful head on your ungrateful neck a little while longer. He's like, God damn you, why'd you have to open your mouth and blow the whole thing up? And Tyrion tries to explain to Jaime that he doesn't have the desire to live his life out on the wall for a crime he didn't commit. That was never a real option for him. He wasn't going to do that, right? And he couldn't sit there, or stand there rather, and listen to Shay's lies. He admits that he fell in love with a whore and was stupid enough to believe that she'd fallen in love with him. Which, between these two, that conversation, Jaime has to be like, we've been down this road. You know what I mean? Like, he's literally seen this exact situation play out with his little brother before.
Yeah.
And yet he did it again. Jaime just living the most frustrating life right now. Really, if you look at the big picture, yes, Tyrion is in a very bad spot. But Jaime is being shot down by his sister, who he loves.
Mm-hmm.
His dad is shitting all over him and trying to force him back to Casterly Rock, which, as we know, is probably not going to play out the way he wants it to now. His little brother's in prison. His sister's trying to get his little brother killed. He lost his hand. He can't sword fight anymore. And he's the least... He has the least, like, notoriety historically amongst any member of the Kingsguard ever. He's just in a bad spot.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not fall- things are not falling his way. One thing that I did that I thought was interesting about this scene is, like, and this keeps happening on the rewatch, is we'll like make observations and like put two and two together in one episode, and then in the very next episode they like really just spell it all out for you.
Yeah.
So Tyrion even says, he's like, that was just what dad wanted. You
yeah,
know?
This like, happens to me like scene by scene. Like I'll be making notes. I'm like, ooh, and I'll hit pause and be making notes about like what I think. And then they explain what I was going to say like in the next scene. And I'm like, oh,
I mean,
well,
it makes sense.
Me.
We've seen it all before. Like, yeah, we're exactly. Like, you know, we probably talked about this at one point and now it's in the back of our heads. And now we're like really seeing things clearly and just putting it all together like a couple of Game of Thrones phenoms over here.
It just, it's kind of sad to feel smart for a moment and then have it, have you reminded like, oh, you idiot, you already knew this. And everyone else did too.
Exactly.
You're actually still the dumb that you were before. Yeah. That's kind of a bummer. Anyway, but yeah, to your point, Tyrion talks to Jaime about the whole deal that he agreed to with, you know, Tywin's plan, that was everything Tywin ever wanted. And that it, for Tyrion personally, it felt so good to take that from him. Which you kind of have to see his point there. Like, that had to have felt incredible. And the fact that Tywin was willing to sacrifice Tyrion, it still disgusts him. He can't believe it. And Jaime's like, look, dude, our dad is a psycho. He would sacrifice any one of us. And Tyrion immediately steps in like, no. Not you. You're the golden son. You could kill a hand. Or, I'm sorry, you could kill a king, lose a hand, fuck your own sister, you'll always be the golden son. And you see Jaime's face when Tyrion says that. He's like, dude, come on, man. Careful. I'm the last friend you've got. Like, come on. Why are you? Don't throw that in my face right now.
Right.
We're already in a bad enough situation, the two of us. Anyway, Tyrion is at least taking some solace in the fact that he got to tell everybody in the court, all the bystanders, what they really are. And Jaime rebuttals with, yes, brilliant speech. They'll talk about it for days to come.
I love that line.
It's a really, and it's also kind of like a tip of the cap to how good that scene was from Tyrion almost. Like, you know what I mean? Brilliant speech. It was a brilliant speech, but those people in the audience that he gave the speech to are so fucking self-centered and stupid, they'll stop talking about it in a couple days.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like there's not even, it's always been the same shit, right?
Yeah.
It's like now maybe it's, with our 24-hour news cycle, it's like we only talk about something for 10 hours.
Right.
But even then, it's like that
will
last. Yeah, a few days. Nothing, basically, is what he's saying.
Right, yeah.
It's just a...
It's a great point by Jaime, though.
It's a drop in the bucket.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're not going to remember that shit.
Jaime then drops the unfortunate news to Tyrion that he can't even beat a stable boy with his left hand, so he definitely can't rep him in that trial by combat. And Tyrion he's taken aback by this. He didn't see that part coming. I think he fully expected at that point Jaime to be the one who steps in for him. And he tries to kind of reason with him. He says, even if you lose, imagine father's face when you fall, the family name snuffed out with a single swing of the sword. And Jaime's like, actually, that is kind of tempting. But no, he's not going to do it, obviously.
Nah.
So the backup plan is obviously Bronn. Tyrion says, well, Bronn fought for me once. He'll do it again. And he says he hopes Sir Meryn Trant is going to be Cersei's champion because he'd enjoy watching Bronn disembowel that pompous child beater. And Jaime's like, I've got some bad news. It's actually not Sir Meryn. That is not who she's going with. And then the scene immediately goes and we are introduced to Cersei's new champion. Or I'm sorry, to Cersei's champion, New Mountain.
New Gregor.
Yes. New Gregor Clegane. He's practicing impaling humans on the beach. As Cersei looks on, who are these people? Are these like prisoners they rounded up for him to slaughter? They look poor.
This was a bit of a sloppy scene, I thought.
Really?
Yeah, just because Cersei walks up and it's like, it was just basically like a sight gag almost.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it was like, okay, we're introducing New Mountain and he needs to be killing people so that we can see how like awful and terrifying
and
he
badass,
is,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I guess he just rode in, and the first thing that he needs to do is like let me practice. Let me get in a few sword swings. And they're like, well, we've got these wood shawl dummies that you can use. And he's like, no, got to be real flesh.
Yeah, I need human.
So they round up some either prisoners or just some poor some peasants from Flea Bottom.
They look like slaves from like Slaver's Bay. Like they took the outfits off some of the Miranese slaves and just threw them on these people and were like, yeah, let's just slaughter them.
And it's nothing more than, it's not even, it's a stretch to call this practice. You know what I mean?
It's just mindless slaughter.
Right.
I love the cut. Like, it's kind of like going to a basketball game and, you know, in the pregame when it's just like LeBron James behind the three-point arc just jacking up threes. Mm-hmm. That's what he's doing here. He's just getting a few shots in. It doesn't really matter if they go in or not. It's just, he's just having some fun with it. But yeah, the way they frame it up, like, first of all, Cersei's like up above on some kind of bridge or some shit, looking over the wall of the castle, watching him do this. Like, he literally stepped off the boat and they had these guys there for him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly she's walking down. It just all kind of happens very quick. It accomplishes what it needs to. It's just a little, like you said, sloppy, I think is a good way to describe it. Cersei says, you seem to be in good form. And the mountain says, who am I fighting? She says, does it matter? And he shakes his head, no. It's all a little cheesy, but it's also pretty awesome.
Yeah, okay, anecdote time. I've seen this dude at Dogwood in Austin.
No shit.
Yeah, he was at the bar when I was there. I think he maybe was dating like a girl that had graduated from UT or went to UT or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he is...
He's large.
He's a large man.
Yeah, I have the note here, his name, the man who plays New Mountain, and I can't say his name, so I won't try, because it's just, there's no way I don't butcher this in a way that could offend us all.
It's Icelandic?
It's like Halfbord Julius Jornsson.
Yeah.
So I lied, I will try. But yeah, he's Icelandic, he's a professional strongman and actor. He's currently still the world's strongest man, terrifying.
Just recently, right? I think he just got that.
Won that. Title, yeah. Uh-huh.
But yes, right now he is the world's strongest man.
He's a freakish proportions for a regular human being. Yeah,
you betcha.
Yeah, oh, you betcha. He's a problem. On the road with Arya and the Hound. Next, we catch up with our favorite good cop bad cop duo. They ride up to some hut that's been attacked. Remind me, where the fuck are they going? Oh, to the Eyrie.
To the Eyrie.
Yeah. The man who owns this hut is like outside bleeding out. And just quickly, a reminder, we just saw a New Mountain, right? The mountain. That is the Hound's brother, just to connect the dots. I know it's been a while since we've discussed that. That's his brother. Anyway, Arya and the Hound have this long, weird conversation with this dying man. I'm not really sure what the point is here. Maybe it's just to get more Arya experience with death. I don't really know until the Hound finally puts this dude out of his memory by sticking a blade right into his side.
Out of his misery?
What did I say?
I think out of his memory.
Man, that's not good. Out of his misery. He says that's where the heart is, and that's how you kill a man to Arya. I still not really clear on what the purpose of this little scene here
was.
Well,
okay, so there's some interesting... subtitles actually threw me on this. They confused me a little bit, because they just kind of have like some interesting... I don't know, there's just like some philosophical talk going on here.
Yeah, a little
bit. So Arya says, nothing could be worse than this. As in, like, there is nothing that could be worse than this. But he says, maybe nothing is worse than this. He's basically saying, I don't know what happens when I die. And maybe whatever that is, maybe the nothingness, if that's what it is worse than sitting here in misery.
Damn, that's deep.
And she goes, and that's when she says, nothing isn't better or worse than anything. Nothing is nothing.
Right.
And I think, and that's when he says, like, who are you? Because this 13-year-old is like waxing philosophical here while he's bleeding out. It was also very, this actor was, whatever the purpose of the scene, this actor was very good.
He was, with
his limited lines. And it all had like a very Shakespearean tilt to me.
That's a good way of looking at
and
it.
And I think. Game of Thrones has done this before. They do cast classical Shakespearean British actors.
Oh, no shit.
In fact, the Stannis
is one of them.
Stephen Delane is like a traditionally classically trained Shakespearean stage actor.
Honestly, that was one of the things that kind of threw me off with this scene is how good the random dying peasant was. Because it was just like, wait, what the fuck is, what is happening here? And I get it. It was just a cool little side.
Yeah.
Like you, like philosophical, deep kind of little, let's talk about death.
Right.
And life thing. Yep. But it was still just, I don't know, struck me as a little off. As soon as that's over, some lunatic jumps on the hound's back and bites him. I'm not sure why that was his attack method. He had a buddy right there with a sword. Why the fuck did he jump on his back and bite him?
Like, there was no knife play in that? It was just a bite?
No, he just bit him. He just fucking bit him like a psycho, like zombie style. And the hound immediately snaps the dude's neck. It was the worst attempt ever. And then the other moron is just standing there.
Yes, and shouts to Rorge.
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 Which worst name ever.
Has to be my favorite random Westerosi name today.
Yeah.
Rorge.
R-O-R-G-E. Terrible. He tells the hound that he's got a bounty on his head for 100 silver stags for killing Lannister soldiers. He also takes the time to inform Arya and the Hound that the king is dead, that Joffrey is dead. He drank poisoned wine in his own wedding. This particular moron, Rorge, is the same one who told Arya that he'd fuck her bloody when he was locked in that cage with Jaqen H'ghar.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very memorable, awful face.
Rorge, you old dumbass.
You old stupid son of a bitch. Anyway, Arya just stabs him right through the heart with needle. Immediately after being taught where the heart is, which is apparently something she didn't know before.
Yeah, so let's see. What is that? I'm going to erase the kill count number.
Is that like four?
I think it's four. I should know because the number is sitting here right on
this
board.
Because of the board, yeah, right? We really should. The board is invisible.
We need a real board.
We need a real board.
Because I'm losing count, but I'm pretty sure it's four.
I think it's four, though. Four sounds close.
Little kid, two in the tavern with the hound, and this makes four.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
If not, we'll get a correction, and we'll be back on the right track.
There we go.
Thanks to the clan fam. Yeah, you're learning, the hound says, and then we move on. Over at the wall, John and company return back from Craster's Keep. I found this to be very interesting. We see Ghost momentarily, and this is so funny, because it's like at this point in the show, maybe they were starting to get self-conscious about how they weren't going to be able to handle the direwolves, and they take the time to explain away Ghost. Alistair tells John to lock him up before he puts him in tonight's stew because apparently the wall is no place for wild beasts, is what he tells him.
Yeah, yeah.
And John goes and does that. And then I'm guessing we won't see Ghost again for a while. They just took the time to explain him off the screen.
That's a good point. I like that. Frankly, they just have to do all these wall scenes because they got to keep Jon Snow in the story. Uh-huh. They're all kind of useless at this point with everything that's happened. And that entire part of the story is...
I mean, it's just... This is basically... It needed 20 seconds. And the part that mattered was the part that John reports to the Night's Watch board of directors or whoever those fuckers are. That Mance's army is actually closer than they expected. And he's like, listen, we need to seal up that tunnel we've got that everybody knows about and that is we have to guard because the giants and the 100,000 strong army, they're going to run right through that fucking thing. It's not going to stop them.
Yeah.
And Alistair and his boys on the board are like, that's an absurd idea. Then they go on to remind Jon Snow that he's a steward, not a builder. And then first builder Yarwick is peer pressured into agreeing with Alistair over Jon.
Yeah.
First builder Yarwick.
First builder.
You've got one job. He just sits there, panics, and then he's like, no, I do not agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's sad.
No, good point about Ghost, though. I just was like, there's Alistair being a dick again. But no, that's to get Ghost off screen.
Yeah. Then Alistair assigns John and Sam to night duty atop the wall, which until the full moon, which I am guessing is not soon. They're going to be stuck up there for a while.
Yeah, like a month.
Yeah.
A few weeks at least. The wall is a place for wild beasts.
It is.
That is where you would want Ghost hanging out and getting and having everybody's back.
It makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
It is maybe more than any other place, a place for wild beasts. Yeah. They have kennels for fuck's sake. Like, what are the kennels for if it's not a place for wild? Anyway, whatever. King's Landing, Bronn visits Tyrion in his cell, and he's dressed in these fancy new clothes with a cape and shit.
Mm-hmm.
He says, gloves are doeskin, softer than a virgin's thighs.
He got all Gucci'd up.
Bronn's a pervert.
He went to the Gucci store.
He is a perverted, Gucci'd out. He looks like, I don't even know. He looks like a French guy who's like about to challenge somebody to a duel by slapping them.
Robespierre.
He looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if he sticks with this fashion choice. I feel like he kind of on and off does. Yeah. That he dresses like this. Anyway, he's feeling all fancy. He's really feeling himself. And he informs Tyrion that he is now to wed Lawless Stokeworth. Lawless Stokeworth.
Mm-hmm.
She just sounds ugly. It's just an ugly name.
Lawless.
Yeah, it turns out Lawless has an older sister who will get Castle Stokeworth when their father dies, and Tyrion wants to make sure Bronn knows this and understands the rules of inheritance. And Bronn's like, yeah, I've actually thought this all through already, and ladies fall from their horses and snap their pretty necks all the time. He's insinuating that what he's going to do is marry Lawless and then have her sister assassinated.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up, if you ask me.
He's going to murder her. The guy is a savage. Just does not care. It turns out Cersei is the one who set this whole relationship between Bronn and Lawless Stokeworth into motion. And Tyrion obviously sees this as a result of their conversation, and he asks Bronn why he even bothered to come. If he's already been bought by Cersei, what is he doing in this room? What the fuck is the point of him being here? And Bronn says, you once said, if anyone ever asked me to sell you out, you'd double their price. He says, if Tyrion wants him to fight the mountain for him, he better give him a massive castle, and every damn room better be equipped with fucking Lisa mattresses.
Hmm.
And Tyrion's like, look.
Drives a hard bargain.
He does.
That Bronn.
He's like, I can provide gold and gratitude. And a Lannister always pays his debts, but Bronn points out that he can't buy Lisa mattresses with gratitude, and his sister is a Lannister too. He's a sellsword through and through, this Bronn, and that's kind of the big takeaway from this scene. Importantly, though,
do you know what you can use to buy Lisa mattresses?
I do.
The cash monies.
The cash monies. Yes. And through June 7th, which coincidentally is my birthday, if you go to lisa.com/dragon, as a member of the Clam Fam, you'll get $160 off your Lisa mattress, which is incredible. That's the biggest discount we've ever gotten just for members of the Clam Fam, just for listening to the podcast. It's awesome.
Dragon.
Yeah, that wasn't a whisper. It was more of a yell, but it's close enough. Try the mattress in your home for 100 nights risk-free, free shipping always. Lisa has also expanded their offering to include the Lisa pillows. Dragon. Love them. Fantastic pillows. They've got blankets, sheets, foundations, and frames, all of which are available online with free shipping. Barrett, you sleep on a Sapira by Lisa, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Yes.
Affirmative.
So do I. And it's a fantastic mattress, the best you can buy. These are extremely comfortable. The Lisa itself is memory foam technology that makes for an unbelievably comfortable bed. If you want to go with the Sapira, it's a little bit more expensive. You get a little bit more money off by going through lisa.com/dragon. And the major difference between the two is that the Sapira has uses the memory foam technology and reimagined pocket coils, a combination of the two, which, like I said, Lisa has the high density foam base layer. So
also the pillows, they're updated.
Yes.
Maybe you, the last time you looked, it looked just kind of like your standard memory foam style pillow.
Right.
But now they have all these, they got like different pockets on them. Not like pockets, but it's all sectioned off.
It's chaos.
It looks like a,
it's a ladder.
It looks like a pull apart morning bun thing with all these little like,
yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
I got
sections.
One of the new ones, and it's, the old ones I loved too, but this is a substantial step up.
It's, as ASAP Ferg would say, it's on a new level.
It is.
Yeah.
It is on a new level. So go to lisa.com today, lisa.com/dragon more specifically. If you're in the market for a new mattress, if you're not in love with your current bed, you will love this one, I promise. Do it, Clam Fam. Get a good night's sleep. Back to the conversation between Bronn and Tyrion. Bronn says, if I gave you the choice between fucking Lawless and fighting the mountain, you'd have your britches down and your cock out before I could blink. Which is a just peak Bronn line. And he goes on to describe the exact strategy and style. This is really interesting to me. He's talking about like if he had to fight the mountain, what he would do basically. He's like, maybe I dance around for a while and maybe eventually he gets tired or whatever. The strategy he describes is exactly the strategy Oberyn ends up going with when he fights the mountain. But Bronn is trying to give an example of why he won't risk it. Like maybe he could get this to go down, but one misstep and you're dead.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happens to Oberyn.
Very good point.
He gets him down, but then has one misstep and he's fucking dead. Spoiler alert, I guess.
Also though, just let's just think about it for a second. Cersei feeling the need to buy Bronn like this
yeah.
is a massive sign of respect for just how good of a fighter Braun is. Am I wrong here?
No, I think you're exactly right. And if she's aware that Braun has saved Tyrion's life before in a trial by combat.
They don't mention that, but they don't. But I mean, if the Mountain was just a sure victory against literally anybody,
she just let Braun
go out there and die.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a part of that, too, is, I mean, sure, it could be a sign of respect for Braun's fighting abilities. I don't know why it wouldn't be. I buy that. But it's also, Cersei has had it. She's done. She's not leaving anything to chance at this point. She's covering every fucking possible base.
Right, yeah.
She's not going to see her little brother weasel his way out of this whole situation. And she's buying everyone. Because as we find out a little bit later, she got Oberyn, too. She attempted to, anyway. Mm-hmm. She goes after anybody that could possibly be of help to him. And anyway, the rest of this scene is pretty touching. Because it's like Bronn and Tyrion acknowledging their friendship. Bronn says, like, I like you. I just like myself more. He apologizes to Tyrion. And Tyrion says, why are you sorry? Because you're an evil bastard with no conscience and no heart? That's what I liked about you in the first place. And it's cool because that's so true. It's just this, you know, they come to terms with each other. They shake hands. Bronn is almost saying goodbye, like as if he's dead. He says, we had some good days together. And then at the end, Tyrion jokes, I suppose I'll have to kill the Mountain myself. Won't that make for a great song? And Bronn says, I hope to hear it one day. And then they part ways. And, well, Bronn leaves the cell. Tyrion stays. Over in Meereen, Dany returns to her quarters to find that new Daario Naharis has snuck in her window. And he's got some flowers for her. Not just any flowers, mind you. Flowers that he swam to an island a mile offshore for.
Which begs the question, how did he get them back?
He swam with one arm, holding them above him.
Okay, so he dog paddled the mile back.
Yeah.
Holding the flowers up above his head.
He's trying to maintain his physique for Dany.
I guess so.
And for fighting. It's for women and fighting. As we find out in this scene, there's two things he cares about. War and women. And that's it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, first of all, Danny's like, what the fuck are you doing in my room, dude? If I want you here, I'll summon you. And he starts bitching about how he has two talents, war and women. And here in Meereen, he can't pursue his talents because Dany has forbid him from killing everyone. And the woman he wants is her. He's bored. And he wants to go kill her enemies. Any enemy, anywhere. He says, let me do what I do best. And Dany, I'm not really sure why, but what I took away from this is she basically decides, like, all right, I'll throw this dude a bone. He's hot.
Literally.
Dig him. Literally, I'll throw him a bone, and I'm going to bang him to at least keep him happy so that he doesn't go off the rails and start murdering people or run off and do whatever. So she sits down on the bed, pours a glass of wine.
I mean, a girl's got to eat, you know what I mean?
That's true. It's that as well, I believe. And she says, very well, do what you do best. Take off your clothes. And we get a Daario ass shot, and then Dany stares longingly at his penis.
Yeah.
In one of probably the most low-key funny moments in the history of the show.
Yeah.
Because
they
get this incredible shot of behind him, his ass, she's in the background, but her line of sight is just right at his dong.
So, he's got a hog, is basically what we're saying.
She looks pleased with his penis.
Or, just a beautiful cock.
I guess. it's one or the other, right?
Okay, shouts to Freeze all Motor Functions right now. I gotta say, Daario's physique is great, but I just have to throw a shout out to the back workout that James Marsden is putting in.
Teddy.
Yeah, because that was something.
Wasn't
way sexier than Dolores. That back, oh my god.
He's got a man back. It's just well chiseled.
Yeah,
that back.
Chiseled is a good is the right word.
If you're watching Westworld, Freeze All Motor Functions is our Westworld podcast that I host with Jared Borislow. Definitely give that a listen. But yeah, Barrett's really taking like shots at Daario here, I feel like.
His physique was fine too.
Anyway, yeah, he's in good shape. It's an okay ass, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, ours are better. But over in Dragonstone, we roll to a scene of Melisandre bathing in a tub.
We went from nudes to more nudes.
Yeah, from man ass to titties.
We got a little something for everybody.
Sadly, that's the kind of human I am. I made a note. We go from man ass to titties. I physically typed that on my computer. I am 30 years old. A grown man, and that's the level of maturity I'm dealing with here. Anyway, Stannis' wife comes in. What the fuck is her name? Selyse. It's just spelled in a way that would make me want to die. And she is just like, oh God, sorry, I'm walking in on you. You're so naked and hot. And Melisandre's like, nah, bring me some of that shit from that medicine cabinet over there. And Melisandre and Shalice have this conversation that kind of reveals Stannis' wife has no sense of humor. She says, humor is not my strength. How did... This woman and Stannis couldn't have been more perfect for each other, and then somewhere along the way, something went horribly wrong, and she went all in on the Lord of Light, and Stannis was just like, God, take me now. It's sad. They suck. They both suck so much. Anyway, Melisandre explains that she has all these potions. They all do different things. They all have different purposes and powers, and it kind of made me think, like, damn, she's got all these different potions of persuasion that can make men horny for her or make men believe anything or anybody, not just men. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it kind of made me wonder, like, has she been using these on people unbeknownst to us? Is that a possibility? And it's probably a stretch, but it just made me wonder what all this witch lady has at her disposal.
I don't think that's outlandish at all. In fact, I think I thought it was pretty interesting.
Like that she
straight admits to Selyse that she's like, I've been using all these parlor tricks to like get people in the door.
Like, wouldn't have Selyse been like, oh shit, you could have done that to me?
Yeah, right.
Because that's the feeling I got. I didn't know if maybe I was just being crazy or paranoid, but it seems like her basic, I guess, strategy here is anything is fair game for the Lord of Light. Yep. As long as you're doing, and even Selyse says a little bit later in the scene,
nothing
done in service of the Lord of Light can be a sin. And if that's what they truly believe, then there's nothing to stop Melisandre from just going around using these...
like killing kids and shit.
Yeah. I mean, she's fucking crazy, but should have been a bit of a red flag for Selyse, but she's not the brightest crayon in the box. Anyway, big question about this scene, Barrett, is why the fuck isn't Melisandre wearing her magic necklace? How is she still young and hot with that rack and that ass, but no necklace? We need answers. What the fuck?
Could it possibly be what she sprinkles into the water?
Maybe. But
because there's no explanation of what that is.
I took it as a mistake on the showrunner's part that they just forgot, or it was something. I mean, you know what I mean? Because this is too weird. It just sucks that later on we get the explanation of her taking off the necklace and becoming this old witch again. Mm-hmm. And we've got this nude bathtub scene with her and she's not wearing it. It's like, hold up here. Somebody disconnected something that should have been connected.
Maybe. But at the same time, it is literally a scene where she is...
explaining magic.
Showing off all the magic shit she has in her medicine cabinet. You
and
know what
she
I mean?
Literally gets some shit sprinkled into the tub with her. So who the fuck knows?
Yeah, maybe they... They don't do anything to explain what the hell she drops in that bathtub.
No.
She just like gives a little shiver and is like, "Ooh, that was the good shit."
Yeah, if you needed an explanation, just take that because it's not going to get better.
But I missed that. I didn't even make that. I forgot to look for the necklace.
I did too. We got a lot of tweets and calls about it and shit. Thank you for everybody who did. But yeah, that I mean, it's not important, people. It's really not. The necklace is the thing that keeps her young. We know that. Maybe they forgot. Maybe it's the sprinkles in the tub. Who the fuck knows? Who cares? Anyway, Stannis' wife, Selyse, for whatever reason, goes out of her way to be like, hey, listen, Melisandre, I know we're going on this trip. I really don't want to bring my daughter because I don't like her. She's just a total cunt. She's the worst mother of all time. And Melisandre's like, oh, well, you got to listen. That's too bad because I need you to bring your daughter on this trip. I have good use for her. The Lord needs her. And the whole time she's saying all that, this like menacing music starts to play in the background. And you're like, oh, well, that's unfortunate. Shireen is totally screwed. They're like staring into the fire. The menacing music starts playing. It's all very foreboding.
The Lord needs her.
Yeah.
And so they set this up right here.
Right.
Which I guess maybe I missed on the first watch.
It's kind of subtle.
Is this going to happen this season?
I don't think so. But I have been wrong about these things before. Sometimes this shit sneaks up on you and you're like, holy shit, I thought that was in like two seasons from now. So maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to say either way.
I feel like it's at the beginning of next season.
I think you're right. But this is obviously alluding to the horrible shit that goes down later.
Which is probably why when it does happen, I think it is season 5. Because if it happened later in this season, I feel like we would have connected those dots right earlier. Like, oh, they just talked about needing her.
Yeah.
Whereas if this happened in episode 7 of season 4, and then we have 3 more episodes plus the year off,
Right.
And then it happens a few episodes.
Could have been easy to forget this scene.
Yeah.
The question I had, and I guess, I mean, I'm kind of going to answer it myself too, but it made me wonder. So does Selyse Baratheon know from this moment what is going to happen to her daughter?
I think so, yeah.
She's staring into the fire, and I think Melisandre is showing her.
I think so too.
Look at this vision. This is what's going to happen.
Yep.
We need this to happen. And it's not like she would have been upset. She doesn't like her daughter anyway, but she does look a little bit like, holy crap.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think from here forward, that's the thing we should keep in mind, is assuming from this moment forward that Melisandre and Selyse both know they're going to burn Shireen at the stake.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how they behave between now and then. Over in Meereen, Jorah, poor son of a bitch, he walks up to Dany's quarters just as Daario is leaving half-dressed. His, like, shirt's open and shit. Yep. He's just like, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's glistening a little bit still from the sex sweat. And Jorah's face is priceless. He's just like, you have got to be kidding me. You just can't catch a fucking break with this woman. Daario says something like, oh, what are you, like, here to see the queen? She's in a good mood. Because he just stuck her. And Jorah goes in. He's clearly disappointed. He has this back and forth with Dany where she discloses to Jorah that, look, she could never have faith in a man like Daario. At least that's what she tells Jorah. It's a little confusing because she then follows that up with the fact that she ordered him to take his men and retake Yunkai, which you'd have to have some faith in him to send him to do that, right? It's just a little contradictory to me. Hmm. I get she's like trying to get rid of him is her implication. She's trying to make Jorah think that. But it's like he's also doing a very important mission.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is just a little funky. She's ordered him to execute every single one of the masters in Yunkai. She gives all these reasons for doing this. And it should be noted, Dany is wearing what I consider to probably be her most, I won't say most badass dress ever, because she gets more badass. Mm-hmm. But this might be the sexiest dress she ever
wears. This is a very hot dress.
It's like a diamond cutout around her belly button.
Uh-huh.
It's just an all-around fantastic gown.
And this is probably like peak Emilia Clarke tone.
It is
as well. I would say.
I would argue the same. Yeah. Yes. That there's anything wrong with later on, which is a little softer.
It's still looks great.
She's quite toned in this mm-hmm. particular era of Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Anyway, Jorah argues. Look. Again, you can't kill all the slave masters. You shouldn't do that. If Ned Stark did to me what you want to do to the masters of Yunkai, then I wouldn't be here serving you. Because, as we know, Jorah was a slaver, and he got caught by Ned Stark. Jorah has clearly changed and is a good man now, and would not have had the opportunity, the second chance, if you will, at life, if he was executed, and that's his point.
Well, and he caught some poachers and sold them into slavery.
So it's even a little trickier.
It's a gray area. He was not just like a straight up like slaver by trade.
Right.
Yeah. But yes, if he had been punished the way that Daenerys wants to punish all these masters, then
he wouldn't
not
be
even
there to
giving
serve
them the chance to turn over a new leaf, do something good, make something new of themselves.
And it's a great point that he makes.
That there's good and evil on both sides of every war ever fought.
Yes.
Poetic line there. And one other thing that I have a note, he mentions, and maybe we already knew this, but that he was a sellsword as well, in fact, for the Golden Company, the other big sellsword division. There's the Second Sons. I think there's three of them, actually. There's three big ones, but the two best, I believe, are the Second Sons and the Golden Company. So I wonder if that will pop up in this last season again, that Jorah like knows a little something about the Golden Company. I don't know.
I can't wait till we get back to season 7 Jorah and watch his whole grayscale thing play out again. Because it's just like when you think things can't get worse for this guy, they just keep getting worse. Anyway, so she sends Jorah. I mean, she tells him they can live in my new world or they can die in their old one. And she sends Jorah to let Daario know that the plans have changed. Tell him I changed my mind. And then she stops herself and she's like, no, tell him you changed my mind. And Jorah gets this proud look on his face
Very proud.
And it's devastating because she just boned the other guy. And you're psyched because she's letting you be a messenger boy to that dude who's probably still rocking like a post-sex stiffy?
He's okay. She is giving him a little bit of something, like a little pride to walk out the door with.
I guess. But holy shit.
She's basically saying that, yes, Daario has my body, but you have my ear.
Which is like not what you want if you're a man. That's not promising at all. But yeah, you know, that's exactly what she's telling him. And
there's a lot of, I mean this in the most not weird way possible, but I think that Jorah is like, I do think that he is in love with Daenerys, but he also has like very like, he feels like her protector as well.
There's like a fatherly, so there's like a fatherly deal thing to it. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and there's a big age gap there. He feels responsible for her overall. So right. I'm with you. It's like, it's not just that he doesn't want her having sex with Dario because he wants to have sex with her. It's also because he's like, come on, this guy's a scumbag. Right. You're too good for this guy. What are you doing?
Yeah.
So,
and yes,
that
there's a little
sense.
Jealousy in there, and he loves Daenerys as well, but it you know.
He's confused.
Yes.
He's got all the mixed up emotions up in there. They even play like this heartfelt music in the background when she says, no, tell him you changed my mind. It just makes it all so much more pathetic. It's just like, I love the unintentional, well, I guess it's kind of intentional, the humor that comes with the Jorah constant cucking.
Well, also, and you're going to go run and like catch up with Dario, and then saying that I changed her mind would sound way douchier than just being like, she changed her mind, bro.
Yeah, this is going to sound terrible. Yeah, like, Dario's going
to
be like,
I talked to her.
He's going to like give a jerk off motion. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, I wish we got to see how that played out. We don't get to, but it would be incredible if we did.
I reasoned with her and I was brilliant and I changed her mind.
He's like, that's great, dude. All right. Whatever.
Yeah, okay.
Oh God. Back on the road with Arya and the Hound. The Hound is trying to fix this bite wound on his neck from that psycho earlier in the
dude,
episode.
He really got with this bite.
He got
it's nasty.
Here's the thing. You got to consider this. The man who bit him, probably not great dental hygiene. All kinds of shit, bacteria up in there. That gets into the cut. The cut starts to, you know, get infected or whatever. Arya is trying to help him keep this thing from getting too infected. And she says, look, you've got to burn away the infected area. And the Hound is very, very insistent that no fire be used in repairing his wound for obvious reasons. And at first, I kind of got like these terrible, not so much this watch, but my first watch through, it's like, shit, could he die from this wound because of what happened to Khal Drogo with the chest cut back in season one? I just will always have that in the back of my head that anybody could die from anything in Game of Thrones as a result.
True.
Anyway, it's obviously that doesn't, it's not what happens, but just felt like sharing. The Hound is just super frustrated in general at this point. He says, thanks to you, I'm a walking bag of silver anywhere the Lannisters hold sway, which is everywhere between where we are now and where we're going. He's starting to think, like, no reward is worth this much trouble. He wishes he'd never laid eyes on Arya. Then he gets into the story about what his brother did to him when he was little, how he pressed him to the fire like he was a nice juicy mutton chop because he thought he stole one of his toys, but he didn't even steal it. He was just playing with it. He says the pain was bad, the smell was worse, but the worst thing was that it was my brother who did it, my father who protected him and told everyone my bedding caught fire. That's a piece we hadn't gotten before. So Papa Clegane actually protected the Mountain by telling everyone, oh yeah, the other kid, he got his face burnt, his bed caught fire, which makes it even more fucked up. And it made me wish that at some point we had met or got to meet the Hound and the Mountain's dad. He must have been a real piece of work.
Oh boy, I bet.
Yeah. Anyway, Arya ends up at least washing out this horrid looking bite and sewing up the thing. It just looks like hell. But again, it was just kind of a bonding scene between Arya and the Hound.
Very tender moment. Yeah. Here. I mean, you can kind of like, right here, I think you can kind of see the Hound starting to slip off of Arya's list, even.
Yes, and slip away from like just the straight hard ass shit and starting to get a little bit more thoughtful about the way things work and how they are and why they are and what he could do to combat that. After that, we're in with our other favorite buddy duo, Brienne and Pod, who are treating themselves to a feather bed for the night and a hot meal not cooked by Pod because he is a terrible chef.
Sometimes you just got to treat yourself.
And they do. And they treat themselves in one of the best places you can.
God.
It's an inn with Hot Pie the Charcuterie God.
Oh my God. I was so excited when Hot Pie popped up.
It's great. This, I mean, what more could you ask for? We want Hot Pie in every episode. He's in this one. All is well.
I mean, well, what we could ask for is exactly what you said. They obviously don't know about the secret menu because he's going on and on about the kidney pies, which are great.
They
and,
are,
you know,
but they're not charcuterie boards.
You gotta ask about the meat and cheese boards that he's got back.
That's
there.
What he's
you,
known
you
for.
You have to know about the off-menu charcuterie boards at Hot Pies Inn. Just if you ever find yourself there, just, you know, remember to ask about them.
Just wink and ask about the charcuterie board.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck. Real bummer that they didn't do that. Yeah. Anyway, Brienne tells him that his kidney pie is wonderful, and Hot Pie takes a seat as a result. And he goes on and on. He says, thanks, I do my best. A good kidney pie is all about the ingredients. Flour, lard, water, eggs, milk. Easy enough. But the meat, peacetime or not, getting your hands on a good bottom round steak and calves kidneys is not easy. I mean, some people settle for plain old beef kidneys. Got no right to cook anything, them. Oh, and the gravy. Don't get me started on the gravy. Very difficult to get right. See, a lot of people give up on the gravy. You cannot give up on the gravy. No gravy, no pie. Simple as that. And the look on Brienne's face the whole time he's like droning on is just like, how do I end up surrounded by morons constantly? It's like pod and hot pie. She can't catch a break. Then she tells Hot Pie that they're looking for Sansa Stark. And Hot Pie gets spooked. He says, Starks, like what? Them lot from Winter Hell, which is what it should be called.
Yes, Winter Hell. I did. Yeah.
It's great.
That must be what, that's like the slang that people are throwing around now. Is like, yeah, a dig on Winterfell.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, you mean Winter Hell? Ha, it's freezing and terrible. He says, nope, ain't seen anyone like that. Heard they was all traitors. Don't need no traitors in here. He's trying not to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know who these people are. He has no reason to trust them. But he must have got a good feeling, because on their way out, first of all, Pod talking to Brienne. He's like, look, I don't know about going around spouting off to any old person that we're looking for Lady Sansa, because the Lannisters are looking for her. They have money and people kill for money. So let's maybe keep that a little more hush-hush. Right then, Hot Pie comes out to let them know he's never met a Sansa Stark, but he does know her sister Arya, that she was headed up north to the Night's Watch, all dressed like a boy last time he saw her, that she was with the Hound. She was going by Ari. And she gives Brienne a wolf pie, which turned out much better than the last one, to give to Arya if they find her. And Brienne immediately turns to Pod, who was just scolding her again for talking about Sansa, mm-hmm, and says, mm-hmm, you were saying?
She's real snooty about it. But I gotta side with Pod on this one, man.
Yeah, keep your mouth shut, lady.
Yeah. But
be a little more secretive.
Right. We do see the wolf love. And it's just like, you see the total package with the meat and cheese, the charcuterie.
Indeed.
The kidney pies, this wolf bread.
The wolf is not a wolf pie. Wolf bread.
It's just, it's no wonder that Hot Pie is up for a James Beard Award this year, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He deserves it.
Yeah.
Nobody deserves it more than him. Anyway, then we have this weird scene where Brienne and Pod surmise that the Brotherhood, they think she's with the Brotherhood, right? That's who they think she's still with. And that Arya is with the Brotherhood, and that they will take her to the Eyrie because her aunt lives there. So even though they think they're with, they get the right idea, even though they're not guessing about the right group.
Yeah, they are with both sisters. They're like, they're hot on the trail.
They are.
They're real close.
Hot.
They are. Yeah. Also thought it was interesting, just because like sometimes we've talked about over these first four seasons, like, who knows what about Arya.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Brienne kind of gives us the current update. Nobody has seen her.
And she's presumed dead. Yeah.
Since they killed Ned Stark.
Right, which is crazy.
Which has been a couple of years now.
I mean, considering all of the little birds that all of these different people have all over the damn country, it is pretty amazing that Arya has maintained total anonymity to anybody who could get word back to people who matter throughout. And even Brienne and Podrick have no idea that she is alive. She's presumed dead. Nobody's even looking for her at this point. They think she's gone. Anyway, Brienne and Pod do end up changing course and heading for the Eyrie, which is interesting because I don't remember what happens between now and then. I do know this is setting the collision course,
mm-hmm,
between the Hound and Brienne and Pod.
Yeah.
And I believe what happens is the Hound and Arya make it to the Eyrie, then they turn around because we know what happens, but then they run into each other because Brienne and Pod are on the way and the Hound and Arya are on the way out, okay. I believe, is what happens because we know what happens there. Anyway, I was just trying to, I was like, wait a minute, Brienne and Pod never get to the Eyrie, so what happens? And then I was remembering. You're welcome. Back in King's Landing, Tyrion is in his cell and he gets visited by somebody else. This time it's Oberyn Martell. They get to talking about brothels, and Oberyn says, I did spend some time with an absolutely stunning blonde the other day, and Tyrion's like, oh, thank God, do tell. I've got every kind of filth down here except the kind I like, and Oberyn says, your sister. And he's like, oh, God, kill me now.
Great joke, though.
Yeah, it is a good joke. He tells Tyrion that Cersei approached him. She was trying very hard to pretend she hadn't come to persuade him against Tyrion, as we discussed when we discussed that scene.
Yeah, here's another example.
We are so fucking smart. he says it was difficult for her to hide her true intentions. It is rare to meet a Lannister who shares my enthusiasm for dead Lannisters. She desperately wants to see you killed. But then it gets really fucking deep and dark.
Yeah.
Oberyn tells Tyrion the story of the first time he met him when he had just been born. His father took him and his sister Ellie on a visit to Casterly Rock. Oberyn is very clear. This was his first time away from Dorne, first of all, but he's very clear that he hated everything about Casterly Rock. The food, the landscaping, everything. He fucking hated the people, the accents. He found all of it to be disgusting. But the biggest disappointment was Tyrion. He says, the whole way from Dorne, all anybody talked about was the monster that had been born to Tywin Lannister. Quote, a head twice the size of his body, a tail between his legs, claws, one red eye, the privates of both a girl and a boy. And he says that Cersei had promised she would show them Tyrion, and then them being Oberyn and his sister Elia. Then one day, finally, Cersei and Jaime took Oberyn and Elia to the nursery and unveiled the freak. He says, your head was a bit large, your arms and legs were a bit small, but no claw, no red eye, no tail between your legs, just a tiny pink cock. That's not a monster, Oberyn told Cersei, that's just a baby. And Cersei's argument was, he killed my mother, and Oberyn tells us she pinched his little cock so hard that Oberyn thought she might pull it off until Jaime made her stop, which is just a terrible visual.
Yes, yes, really awful.
And it also gives you some insight into Cersei's always been this way.
Yeah.
Even as a little girl.
When the depth of her hatred for Tyrion runs.
It's truly
so
sick. Yeah. It's really deep and sick. And Cersei goes on, everyone says he will die soon. I hope they are right. He should not have lived this long.
What do you take as that after this story, what's the age difference of Oberyn and Tyrion supposed to be? You think like 10 or 12 years maybe was Oberyn 10 or 12 when he visited?
I mean, I took it to be around what the age difference between Cersei and Tyrion is, and I'm not sure what that is either, but you know, within a generation, within mm-hmm. 10 years of
yeah.
each other,
right.
I think.
Right, okay.
Anyway, because of this story, it's Tyrion is visibly shaken. He's emotional. Like the detail of the mm-hmm. level of hate that Cersei had for him, even as a baby, even before he could remember it, he shook. This is, I mean, it would be for anybody, but it's just, it's crazy that Tyrion, knowing what he knows about his sister, knowing that she wants to have him killed, knowing how much she despises him, having all the interactions he's had with her over the course of his life, there was still a story that could get him choked up about her hatred for him, and this was it. Oberyn goes on, Tyrion at this point is kind of like, dude, what are you doing here? This is miserable. Like, I'm already unhappy enough. Holy shit. And Oberyn goes on to tell Tyrion that he wants justice for his sister and her children. Tyrion's like, dude, if you want justice, you've come to the wrong place. And he says, I disagree. I've come to the perfect place. I want to bring those who have wronged me to justice, and all those who have wronged me are right here. I will begin with Sir Gregor Clegane, who killed my sister's children and then raped her with their blood still on his hands before killing her too. I will be your champion. And Tyrion exhales. What a scene.
Yeah, the justice wrong place line is fantastic and just, you know, a real signal marker for the series as a whole, I think. I feel like it's a pretty famous one. If you want justice, you've come to the wrong place.
Yeah, that whole exchange at the end is one of the most famous back and forth dialogues in the history of the show to me. For me, one of the most memorable scenes, and I remember being like, "Yes, let's fucking go."
And that's what's sad. My other note is this scene creates hope. Sad, sad hope.
Terribly sad hope, because we know what happens.
And God, I mean, Oberyn was really going to fuck some shit up.
At this point,
he wasn't going to stop with the mountain.
No. That was the first person he was going to take out. And then he was going to keep going.
Yeah. It's going to be tight.
And the promise of what could be with him. Yeah. And at this point, if that was the last scene you had seen, sorry for bad wording, but I had never been more excited about a character on this show than I was about Oberyn in that moment. Like, I was like, this is our hero. This is the dude that's going to change shit and, like, shake shit up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we get one more episode with him. That's it. Yeah. One more. That's all. So we build him all the way up to the top, and it's like, yes, fuck yes, this guy. And then George R. R. Martin just shits all over all of us. But that's how it goes in this universe. At the Vale, Sansa's just kind of wandering around the grounds, and it's snowing, and it reminds her of her home in Winterfell. It's this beautiful snowy landscape, and she makes this insanely intricate and detailed snow castle version of Winterfell, which how the shit did she manage to make this thing so well? She's like a snow architect.
Yes, yes. I did note.
Very impressive.
I may have the answer here in my notes. I have to scroll all the way back down, though.
Does she have a pail?
Sansa is a gifted snowcastle builder.
Oh, there it is. That's the explanation we needed. Yeah, incredibly well done. And then up wanders Robin Arryn, Lord of the Vale, and titty milk addict.
Just a general freako.
He's a fucking weirdo, this kid. And they have this painful conversation, which just further reveals how disconnected and extremely idiotic Lord Robin is. All he wants to do is make people fly through the moon door.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And he thinks everywhere should have a moon door. He's fucking nuts. He wants to put a moon door in Sansa's snow castle version of Winterfell. He accidentally knocks over a tower. Sansa gets frustrated and says she'll have to rebuild the whole thing. Robin says it was already ruined because it didn't have a moon door. And then he goes berserk and kicks it all to shit. And Sansa slaps the fuck out of him and he runs off crying like the little bitch that he is. The kid is insufferable. By the way, still alive. Mm. In season 8, we're still going to have Robin Arryn out there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy has to die. They can't save the world and have Robin Arryn still out there drawing breath. I can't go on. You know what I mean? Like, it can't be like Danny or Jon Snow sitting on the Iron Throne and everything is all good and everything is great and the Night King's been destroyed. And then off somewhere in the distance is Robin Arryn sucking titty milk. Like, that can't be how this goes down. I'm sorry. He has to die. The child must die. Anyway, Littlefinger approaches. They get to talking, and Sansa asks Peter Baelish why he really killed Joffrey. And Littlefinger levels with her here. He says, "I loved your mother more than anything you could ever know. I loved your mother more than you could ever know. Given the opportunity, what do we do to those who hurt the ones we love? In a better world, one where love could overcome strength and duty," what he means there is, "in a better world, one where I would be more worthy than Ned Stark, you might have been my child," he says, which is extremely creepy considering what goes on in the rest of the scene. He says, "But we don't live in that world." And then he says, "You're more beautiful than she ever was," referring to her mother. And he like draws closer to her, and Sansa's like, "Lord Baelish," and it's weird because she's almost like semi, like buying into the flattery here, but it's also like, oh God, this is weird.
The whole thing is weird to me because. Okay, right. So he says, "You could have been my child, but we don't live in that world." Basically, right. Like, you're not my child, therefore we can do other things together.
Let's kiss.
But it's more lies, isn't it? That's not why he killed Joffrey.
No, it's not really why he. I mean, I guess with him, there's never one reason, right? Everything is the reason that rides out all the other reasons is power.
Yeah, but because how was killing Joffrey? Killing Joffrey was not direct vengeance for the death of Catelyn Stark. That would have been killing Walder Frey.
Right. I think he's just kind of deflecting.
He is. Yeah. Totally. That's what I'm saying. Like, well, this is just like a, I don't know.
It also made me think that he intentionally set this all up to where Aunt Lysa would see him kissing her.
Well, yes. He knows Lysa's watching. At this moment.
Okay, so that's
for sure.
That's the only reason he says anything he says here then is he's just trying to get the romance flowing so he can pull off one kiss and get Lysa to see it.
Yeah.
Anyway, after she says Lord Baelish, she says, "Call me Peter," as Barrett made fun of earlier. No need for us to rehash how stupid that whole line was. He kisses Sansa for a few seconds, and it should be noted that it is, again, this is a few seconds. It's not an immediate pull away.
Mm-hmm.
She pulls away after a few seconds. And the psycho Aunt Lysa saw it all, other than her pulling away, of course, because that would have messed it all up. We don't really know how this scene between Sansa and Peter ends. It just breaks away from it, with Sansa re-entering the castle, Aunt Lysa waiting there for her, standing at the moon door, staring down through it because she's insane, just like her fucking crazy kid. And she starts talking. She says, "Do you know how far the fall is?" "Neither do I, precisely. Hundreds of feet. It's fascinating what happens to bodies when they hit the rocks from such a height. The impact breaks them right apart, like eggs dropped on the floor. Sometimes pieces remain intact. You'll find the head sitting on its own, every hair in place, blue eyes staring at nothing. So, on occasion, I guess they get bored and they go down to where the moon door opens up to, and they check and see how the bodies are doing?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah.
Are the eyes blue because the White Walker situation?
I don't know, whatever. She just,
she's fucking
just
nuts.
Just painting a picture for you.
Yeah. She tells Sansa, "I know what you did." Sansa thinks she's referring to her hitting Robin and starts apologizing, and Aunt Lysa immediately interjects, "Don't be coy with me, you little whore. You kissed him. You kissed Peter." A full-blown freak out here from Lysa. She goes nuts. She's grabbing Sansa by the hair, pushing her over the moon door. She says, "My father, my husband, my sister, they all stood between us, and now they're all dead. That's what happens to people who stand between Peter and me. Look down, look down," she screams over and over. Then Littlefinger walks in, and he tells her to let go. She continues melting down. She's weeping. She says, "I lied for you. I killed for you. Why did you bring her here?" And Littlefinger tells Lysa that he'll send Sansa away. He swears on his life. He swears to all of the gods. I just thought that was interesting. It's like he couldn't care less about what either of those things mean. And then Lysa finally throws Sansa to the side and continues sobbing. Littlefinger approaches, says, "Oh, my sweet wife, my sweet, silly wife." Then he picks her up to her feet, looks her in the eye, and says, "I've only loved one woman only one my entire life." And Lysa smiles. And then he hits her with, "Your sister." And the smile immediately turns to a frown. And he pushes Lysa right through the moon door.
Oh, yeah.
She falls screaming. Screen goes black. Roll credits. One of the crazier deaths we see. One of the more shocking.
Yeah. Yes.
Because your immediate afterthought here is like, oh, my God, he just murdered the Lady of the Vale in the middle of her home. But then it's also like, well, nobody can really prove what happened here. There's no witnesses. She just went on to explain that, like, when the bodies hit down there, they, like, break apart when they get impact. It's not like anybody could do an autopsy on this thing. The head could be off somewhere just chilling with every hair in place or whatever. It's just, you're basically like, okay, how's he going to get away with this?
Yeah.
That's where we leave it off.
That's definitely where you leave off. But I'm with you. This was certainly a shocking death. There is no foreshadowing for this one.
No, it's very sudden.
It's really unexpected and sudden, and like it's got a lot of major implications and
huge. One of the more, I guess, like the ripple effect from this death is bigger than most deaths on the show.
Yeah.
A lot happens as a result of this, and we're still at the point, like, it's tough. But if you look back, or if you think back to when you were watching season four, Littlefinger wasn't a full-on villain or full-on, like, guy you rooted against at this point yet. You were still not real clear what his intentions were. You're like, why the fuck's he being weird with Sansa? This age gap is strange. The whole thing's really creepy. But all in all, you're happy he kills Lysa, because Lysa's a fucking psycho.
Yeah.
And you're still kind of, at least I was, still a little bit Team Littlefinger at this point. I wasn't sick of his meddling yet. I wasn't sure if he was all bad or all good or what his situation was.
Well, over the last six episodes, he has just taken out two people that we really didn't like.
Right. He's doing some damage, seemingly for the good guys.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's just kind of funny because you have to separate the two. Like, you know, when he meets his demise in season seven, by that point, I hated Littlefinger. I was like, God, enough of this fucking guy. Like, can he please get got? And at this point, anyway, all in all, another great episode. Shocking. Any other thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be real, real with you. I'm not looking forward to watching episode eight.
No, it's going to be pretty miserable. Yeah, that's what we'll come next Monday. Sorry, we're coming out on Tuesday this week because of Memorial Day weekend, obviously. But we will be coming back next Monday to talk about the eighth episode of season four, which is titled The Mountain and the Viper. One of the more memorable episodes of the show in the history of the show.
God.
Written by Benioff and Weiss, directed by Alex Graves. There's going to be a very unenjoyable segment of this episode. If you don't remember exactly what happens already, you will. And it sucks. It's just one of those ones we have to get through. We will discuss it at length, and we'll try to work through the emotions of it all together. All right? As a member of the Clan Fam, you can also go to rowdygentleman.com. Rowdy Gentleman is our in-house clothing brand that we own and operate here at Grand X. Barrett actually sources all the products. We have two designers here. We design all the t-shirts. We've got this full-blown product development committee that we put together all the products in. And we've got the Spring 2018 offering that's available on rowdygentleman.com right now. Perfect for you to wear all spring and the upcoming summer season. Tons of great swim trunks. Probably the greatest swim trunk collection in the history of mankind.
We are about to go through a... Basically, it's getting hot as balls here in Austin, Texas. Oh, way earlier than it usually does.
It's quite hot.
It's like highs of over 100 degrees for the next 10 days straight. And usually doesn't happen until the end of June. And it's still May. So this is the type of shit that you need on the day-to-day.
Summer is coming.
Bright, summery, light, comfortable clothing. I am going on a beach trip in a couple of weeks. I'll be out on the beach, and I have the Current Surfers swim trunks that I will be debuting. I just bought my dad two of our Hawaiians for Father's Day.
What a nice son you are.
I went with the sombreros one.
Oh, word.
Because, you know, it's for fiesting.
Los sombreros.
And the Palawan, which has just got like a tight, like, fish, but also kind of hippie, trippy, Grateful Dead vibe.
Okay.
I actually bought one of those for myself as well. So me and my dad can match on Father's Day because I'm real like that.
Must be nice. My favorite pair of swim trunks is the Mezcalitos.
Yeah, they're sold out in my size.
Oh, well, I don't know whether to compliment you or insult you. There's a medium and an XL left. That's all I know.
Go cop.
Yeah, go invoke Sumai on rowdygentleman.com, Sumai at checkout. You'll get 10% off your entire order. Support the show, support Grand X Media and everything we're doing here by shopping on rowdygentleman.com. If you are not personally inclined to wear any of the clothes, perhaps you are a female who does not desire male clothing, that's fine. Buy some for your brother or your boyfriend or your uncle or your dad or your aunt who dresses in male clothing. Whatever you want. I don't know. You get 10% off. That's the whole point. Follow the show on Instagram at Oysters, Clams, Cockles and on Twitter at Clams and Cockles. You can like us on Facebook.com/Oysters, Clams, Cockles. You can follow me, Ross Bolin, on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WR Bolin. Barrett, where can the Clam Fam follow you?
Yo, I am on those social mediums. Get at me. Twitter, Instagram, at Barrett Dudley.
Our hotline number is 866-43-CLAMS. We would very much appreciate it if you are a member of the Clam Fam that is enjoying the Night's Rewatch and you have not yet given us a rating and review on iTunes. Please take the 20 seconds to do that right now. Go on iTunes, type in Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Obviously, smash the subscribe button if for some insane reason you have not done that already. Leave us a 5-star rating and write a quick review. It does a lot for the show to continue growing, for the Clam Fam to get bigger and bigger, for us to stack more bodies at the wall in the Night's Rewatch. If you want Game of Thrones or Oysters, Clams, and Cockles themed t-shirts, go to grandxshop.com/OCC. We will see you all next Monday.